It is November the 11th,
right after Rosh Chodesh Kislev,
and we are in our creation series in Parshas Chayei Sara on page 118 and 119. So we left off with Rivka returning to, Eliezer returning to Avram's house with Rivka. And now we have the meeting between Rivka and Yitzchak. Now remember, they have not met each other yet. This is a classic shidduch, where the match has already been made. The chasan and the kala have not met each other yet. And now they're about to meet. So, the Torah tells us, we're starting from Pasuk Samach Beis 62, on page 118. V'Yitzchak ba mibo be'er l'chai ro'i, and Yitzchak came from coming to be'er l'chai ro'i, that was the well where Hagar had met the angel. V'yoshev be'eret ha-Negev, and he was dwelling in the land of the south.
Thank you.
And Yitzchak went out to what's the word they use over here? Lasuach usually means to talk. To supplicate. Okay. It literally means to talk. In the field. Towards evening. He lifted his eyes and he saw, and behold, camels were coming. Rivka lifted up her eyes, and she saw Yitzchak, and she fell from upon the camel. And she said to the slave, who is this man that is going in the field to greet us? And the slave said, who Adoni, that is my master. And she took the tzaif would be the veil, or the, not the veil, but the
scarf,
okay. Vatiskas, and she covered herself. Vayisapero eved liYitzchak, and the slave told Yitzchak, Eis kol hadvarim asher asa, all the things that he did. Vayivyeh Yitzchak ha'ohela Sara imo, and Yitzchak brought her to the tent of Sarah his mother. Vayikach ez Rivka, and he took Rivka. Vatihilo li'isha, and she was to him for a wife. Vayeh havelha, and he loved her. Vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo, and Yitzchak was comforted after his mother. So there's our meeting of Yitzchak and Rivka, and their marriage. Going back to where we just started reading, page 118, Samach Beis, verse 62. Where was Yitzchak going? V'Yitzchak ba mibo be'er l'chai ro'i. Yitzchak came from coming to be'er l'chai ro'i. Now, be'er l'chai ro'i, as I mentioned, be'er l'chai ro'i, as I mentioned, is the well upon which Hagar met the angel. And Hagar was thrown out of Abraham's home because of her evil deeds with Yishmael. And, I'm jumping the gun. That's the second time she was thrown out. The first time, when she ran away, which we already spoke about, when she ran away from Sarah, then she came to a well, and, well, she met a malach, and she was at a well, and the angel, several angels spoke to her. And she named the well Be'er L'chai Ro'i, which means the well of the living one that sees. The Hashem sees everything that goes on. So Yitzchak came from coming to Be'er L'chai Ro'i. So what was he doing at Be'er L'chai Ro'i? Let's make a little bit more room here. Okay, there's some chairs over there. All right.
There's some chairs in the corner there.
We're going to have to move to Heritage Hall soon.
Well, we have it set up. Glad as it works so hard to have it set up.
Yeah, yeah, well, thank you. No, it's good. It was good.
Is that next to Flash?
Just there's a chumash right behind us. There's a couple of on the shelf. There's a couple of chumash.
I got one.
We should just tell the people on the tape we have hundreds of people in this room, and we're just packed into the room. We can barely move and breathe. We're on page 118. So we just read from Pasuk Samach Beis, verse 62, to the end of the chapter, and now we're going back over it. So Yitzchak came from coming to Be'er Lachayroi. Now, isn't that a funny way of saying it? Yitzchak came from coming to Be'er Lachayroi. Wouldn't you say that he came from Be'er Lachayroi? They'll be like saying that where was the last city you traveled to?
L.A.
Okay. That would say like if Josh here was returning from L.A. and we would say Josh came to Atlanta from coming to L.A. It's a funny way to say it. Just say that he came from L.A. To say he came from coming to Be'er Lachayroi is a little bit funny. Like what's the intent of that? So how do we understand that?
Was he somewhere else first and then went there and then went?
So obviously he's been there before, I guess.
Explain what you mean.
Well, like you said, coming to Atlanta from coming from L.A. It seems to me that he must have been somewhere else first.
A third place.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. We don't know that Yitzchak was anywhere else. Yitzchak, it says, "Hu yoshev be'eretz ha-negev." He was dwelling in this land of the south, which is where Be'er Sheva is, where Be'er Lachayroi is. We don't know that he was somewhere else. He came from coming to Be'er Lachayroi.
Could Be'er Lachayroi been a large, an easy trip to make?
Okay, so it's telling us something about the journey to Be'er Lachayroi. Right? That's what you're suggesting was the difficulty of the journey. But what's clearly being shown to us is that he not only came from Be'er Lachayroi, he also went to Be'er Lachayroi. And that's being accentuated. That the trip not only from Be'er Lachayroi to this place, which we don't even know where the place is yet, we'll get to that in a moment, but the trip to Be'er Lachayroi is also being accentuated, either because, we'll get to Rashi in a moment, right? We're going to get to Rashi. But either because he was coming from a third place, or because the trip itself was difficult. So what does Rashi say?
Rashi says that he went to get Chadar.
Okay. So Rashi tells us that he had gone to Be'er Lachayroi in order to get Hagar, Abraham's wife in the past, his erstwhile wife, that who after Sarah had died, now he was going to bring Hagar back to Abraham for him to remarry her. So let's just review the facts about Hagar. Hagar is an interesting person anyway to think about. We've talked about her several times already, but let's debunk a myth while we're at it. Hagar was the mother of Shmuel. Hagar acted up while under Sarah. When Sarah first gave her to Abraham, we discussed that at length. How she after she was given to Abraham as a wife, she then decided that she was better than Sarah, and as a result threw off the yoke of Sarah, which was her undoing, because Hagar's only way of being the person that she could have been was to remain subservient to Sarah, because it was only through Sarah that she could have possibly reached a level of righteousness that would have entitled her to become part of the Jewish people. But she threw that off and she ran away. And because of that, the first son that she had conceived from Abraham miscarried. And therefore, she did not have the opportunity for her child to really become part of the Jewish people, which is what would have happened. But instead, she ran away. That's when she had the angel appear to her and say she's going to have another son whose name is going to be Yishmael, and we know about that. She goes back to Abraham. She has Yishmael. Then, after Yitzchak is born, Yishmael is 14 when Yitzchak is born, as Yitzchak grows, at some point or other, Yishmael is already either in his late teens or early 20s, he becomes a very, very bad influence over Yitzchak. Then Sarah goes to Abraham and tells him what? Send him and Hagar away. Throw them both out of the house. Abraham does not want to do it. Hashem tells Abraham that it is the correct thing to do. Sarah is 100% correct. Hagar and Yishmael must be thrown out of the house. That is the right thing to do, and therefore Avraham does. And he throws them out of the house. Yishmael almost dies, but in the end, Hashem listens to the prayer of Yishmael and saves Hagar and Yishmael. They wander in the desert of Beersheba, and Hagar gets Yishmael a wife from where? From Egypt, correct? And as Rashi tells us back then, they go back to their idolatrous ways. Then, the next time we hear about, that's the last thing we hear about Hagar, till here. We know about Yishmael later on. What's the next story that involves Yishmael?
He goes along with Abraham.
Before that? Akedas Yitzchak. Burning Abraham hasn't happened yet. It's going to happen soon. But Akedas Yitzchak, we know that Yishmael accompanied Abraham and Yitzchak on Akedas Yitzchak. So, and we also know that Yishmael did teshuva at the end of his days. Here, Yitzchak now is, after Sarah has died, is going to bring Hagar back to remarry Abraham. What is Hagar's feelings towards Yitzchak? And what is Yitzchak's feelings towards Hagar?
Why would he pick her?
Why would who take who?
Why would he want Hagar for his father's second wife?
Why not?
Well, she's been thrown out because she wasn't raising her son properly.
Correct.
Showing respect. So why?
In fact, Yishmael attempted to kill Yitzchak. That's part of what happened over there. He was not only a bad influence, he would shoot arrows in Yitzchak's direction and say he was just playing. He was just for sport. So there was definitely a point in time when Hagar and Yishmael had to be thrown out of the house. Yishmael, we know, did teshuva. We're going to see presently that Hagar is given a very complimentary name. Hagar and Yishmael take their being thrown out of the house to heart, and they do teshuva. Hagar and Yishmael do not harbor resentment against Yitzchak. They do not harbor resentment against Abraham, and it is likely they don't harbor resentment against Sarah either. They understood that it was the right thing that they got thrown out of the house. Not as people would react today. And this is the danger of superimposing our own feelings on the stories that we find in the Chumash. You see clearly that Hagar is willing to go back to Abraham at the behest of Yitzchak. Yitzchak goes to bring Hagar back. We also know that Yishmael did teshuva. That's also an avor that we have.
We know from the oral.
In the Bris Ben Havisarim, Hashem informs Abraham that he will die b'seva tova, with a good old age. So Chazal tells us that means that Yishmael did teshuva. In addition, we're going to see later that when Yishmael is involved in the burial of Abraham, it says that he was buried by Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak before Yishmael. Yishmael put Yitzchak in front of him, recognizing that Yitzchak belongs before him.
The part about Hagar. That's
Yitzchak is going to bring Hagar back. Would you listen if you were Hagar?
How did he know that did teshuva?
What? I don't know how he knew. I don't know how he knew. But I'm pointing out to you that there was no resentment from Hagar to Yitzchak at all. And there was no resentment from Hagar from Yitzchak to Hagar. They were fine. This is a misnomer. It is a mistake. It is ignorance for someone to suggest that there was some kind of a resentment between the two. You see clearly over here that Yitzchak was happy to go get Hagar and bring her back to Abraham after Sarah had died for her to remarry Abraham.
And nothing between him and Yishmael?
Yishmael does teshuva. Yishmael puts Yitzchak in front of him. There is resentment between Yaakov and Esav. That goes on forever. But Yitzchak and Yishmael do, in the end, get along. And they recognize, Yishmael and Hagar recognize that it was the right thing that they were thrown out of the house, which we know it was. Hashem told Avraham that it was the right thing to throw them out of the house. And so even though today that sort of measure usually will fail, that sort of measure will usually result in an everlasting resentment. That's because today we don't know how to take criticism. But in their day, Hagar and Yishmael were not resentful, and they learned to learn their lesson. And they did teshuva. Yes?
So Ishmael was already back in the house, because this is already after the Akedah Yitzchak. That's why Sarah died. So now Hagar is left alone wherever she is. Ishmael's already back in the house.
Well, we don't know where he was living. We know that he accompanied them on...
Okay, so he accompanied with them, so they already knew that there had been teshuva accomplished. Therefore, when Sarah died, it was only because Sarah didn't want Hagar in the house in the first place. So I don't think you respect someone's dead person's wishes.
Sarah had no personal reason to not want Hagar in the house. She didn't want Hagar and Yishmael to have a bad influence over Yitzchak.
Right, but Yitzchak's a grown man now. And he's going to get married. So there's not a reason anymore to date.
That's right.
House, especially if they did Tshuva. And and Avram already sees that.
So he brings her back. Right.
No, humiliated Sarah when she was not good mate for Sarah.
That was the first...
Therefore Sarah was angry with her. That was... As a maid.
The first time when Hagar ran away... That's because she was throwing off the yoke of Sarah, and she ran away. The angel appeared to her. Remember those first that we talked about this. The first word the angel says to her is, Hagar Shifcha Sarah. Hagar, the maid of Sarah. Where do you think you're going? And the angel makes it clear to her, you have no place in this world other than as the maid of Sarah. What are you trying to do? So she goes back, and she becomes subservient again. Then she gets thrown out because of her son, because of what he's doing to Yitzchak. But you see there's no resentment, and you see in the end she does come back. Now the Torah is calling this to our attention right here, and that's very, very important. So let's go through it again. Yitzchak came from coming to Be'er Lachayroi, which was a significant thing. V'hu yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev, he's living in the land of the south. V'yeitze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh lifnos aret. Yitzchak went out to talk in the field towards evening. And you already saw the English, which says to supplicate. Although that's not what lasuach means. It means to talk. He lifted up his eyes and he saw boyim, and behold, their camels were coming. What was Yitzchak doing in the field? And where is this field? He was davening. What tefillah was he davening? He was davening mincha. The Gemara tells us, Avraham established shacharis, Yitzchak established mincha, and Yaakov establishes mairiv. Avram established Shacharis when, who remembers? When he prayed? Right, after Sodom's destruction though. When he saw the destruction of Sodom, and he went out and davened anyway, that was establishing Shacharis. Yaakov is going to establish Meir when he runs away to Lavan. This is where Yitzchak establishes Mincha. Here, when he goes out to the field, towards evening. Towards evening is before evening. It was the late afternoon prayer of Mincha. And that's what Yitzchak is doing over here. Where is this field? The Gemara tells us that Avraham called this place a mountain, Yitzchak called it a field, and Yaakov called it a house. This is the Har HaBayis. This is the Temple Mount. Of course, there's no temple yet, but this is the future location of the Beis HaMikdash, which also was the location of Akedat Yitzchak. So Yitzchak here revisits the place where he was offered as a karban, as a sacrifice. He goes to that field, which is also a mountain, he goes to that field towards evening in order to daven, and he establishes the prayer of Mincha. He davens it, he establishes it for all generations. We daven mincha because he davened mincha. And he lifts up his eyes and he sees, and behold, camels are coming. What was he davening for?
Davening for a shidduch.
Okay. He was davening for a wife. That is what he wanted to do here. He wanted to daven for a wife. So Yitzchak goes into the place where he was offered as a sacrifice, because he knows that that's the place that is closest to Hashem. It is the future location of the Beis HaMikdash. It is the place where he himself became consecrated as a karbon, as a sacrifice, where he reached a level of Kedusha that no one else has ever reached. And he goes there to daven for a wife. What was he doing when he went to Be'er Lachai Ro'i? Getting a wife for his father. Do we see the formula here? Yitzchak wants a wife. He understands the importance now of marrying a wife. He understands that, the same thing his father understood, which is that had he been slaughtered on that altar, there would have been no longer any offspring, because he wasn't yet married. And Hashem, that was the whole test, that Hashem was testing Avraham. Avraham had wanted this child in order to continue his legacy. He has the child. The child is 37 years old, and Hashem says, slaughter him. No more legacy. After that is over, and of course he passes the test, as does Yitzchak, Avraham says, had he been slaughtered, there would have been no more legacy. Clearly it is time to create that legacy. It's time to find him a wife. And so, he sends Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. Yitzchak also understands the time has arrived for him to marry. And so, first, he goes and takes care of his father's wife, his father's having a wife. He goes and goes to Be'er Lachai Ro'i to bring Hagar back to his father Abraham. Then he prays for a wife. So the formula is clear that he does what he needs for somebody else. Then prays that he himself should be answered. And, of course, right after he does so, he lifts up his eyes and he sees, and behold, camels are coming. And those are the camels upon which Rivka is riding. Does Yitzchak see Rivka? What does the Torah tell us? He sees camels. He does not see the individuals on the camels yet. He sees camels. Let's move on. Vatisa Rivka es eineha. Rivka lifted up her eyes. Vatera es Yitzchak. She sees Yitzchak. Now, when I was younger, I used to think that what was happening here is that, you know, they're getting closer and closer. So the Torah is telling to us in real time. So that, you know, Yitzchak looks up and sees camels. He doesn't see people yet. The next pasuk is a few minutes later. So now Rivka looks up and she sees a person. She sees Yitzchak. But that's one possibility. But I don't believe that's what it means.
She has better eyes. She's younger.
Okay. She's higher up. She's younger.
Yitzchak's already gone blind.
Oh, he hasn't gone blind yet. We know that's not true. Okay.
No, she knows she's going to meet her future husband.
Well, he knows what the camels mean, because he sees the camels coming back. He sees, I mean, he knows that Eliezer had taken a bunch of camels. I mean, he knows what's happening over here. But at the same time that he sees camels, she sees Yitzchak. So you could explain it through circumstances, either because she's higher up, maybe her eyesight was better, maybe because with her it was a bunch of camels and a bunch of people. He's just by himself. So it's easier to see him than it is for him to pick her out. Okay. All that is possible.
It must be physical, spiritual.
I'm not going to disprove any of those possibilities, but I'm going to give you another possibility. She sees Yitzchak. The Mefarshim say over here that she saw Yitzchak in all his grandeur. She saw Yitzchak after his prayer. Yitzchak, remember, is considered a karbon, is considered a sacrifice. Yitzchak has kedusha, has holiness, that he's not allowed to leave the land of Eretz Yisrael. His kedusha. When he davened, he radiated with that kedusha, with that holiness. He sees a bunch of camels. It's too far away to see anybody. But he can be seen from much further away, because he literally glowed. He radiated. And you could see from far away. And Rivka lifts up her eyes and sees Yitzchak. Now, I just said it very simply, he could be seen from far away. I suspect that you have to have the eyes to see that Kedusha. Rivka is able to lift up her eyes and see that Kedusha of Yitzchak, even from a great distance. Even though it was too far away to pick out a person, she was able to see him. Vatipome al hagamol, and she fell from upon the camel. Chazal tells us she didn't fall off, like, she fell off the camel. She lowered herself down from the camel. She felt it was inappropriate for her to meet him while riding on a camel. She thought that was not the way for her to meet her husband. That he's walking, she should be walking as well, not to be riding up on top of a camel. So she gets off of the camel. Vatamar ala evad, and she said to the slave, Mi ha'ish halazeh, who is this man? Ha'olech basadeh likrasenu, who is going in the field to greet us. What were her choices?
Look, she already knows it's him. She can see
his
car and
his
granddaughter. Why is she asking?
Good
question. Why? It could be anyone. Why she could see, could expect it to be in this place in this moment?
Good.
Anyone else?
You're right. The problem is that we just read that Batera es Yitzchak, she saw Yitzchak. That seems to imply that she recognized him. She'd never seen him in his life. In her life. She's never seen this man. So what does it mean she saw Yitzchak?
He
looks like Abraham. She's never seen Abraham either. But you're right. She understood that this person was not some guy off the street. This was Kedusha. And therefore could only be Yitzchak or Abraham. So she says to him, who is this man? Who's going in the field to greet us? Vayomer ha'eved, hu Adoni, he is my master.
That doesn't answer the question.
How does that answer the question? Who is his master?
Abraham.
Is it Abraham or is it Yitzchak?
It was Abraham.
Remember the document. What did the document say?
All he had was Yitzchak.
Abraham was giving everything he had to Yitzchak, including the slave. So, hu Adoni, he is my master, would mean that this is Yitzchak.
He was a living will.
Well, it was.
Ended it already over.
The we're going to see later that Abraham is still going to give out things, as we'll see. He's not done giving things away. Before he dies, he's going to give more out. So I don't know if it was a letter of intent or if it was an actual gift.
I thought Eliezer earns his freedom by bringing back Rivka.
Mm-hmm.
So. He was given to Yitzchak on condition that he failed in this mission?
Not clear. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know I don't know how it worked out. I'm not sure. Vatikach hatzo'if, and she took the scarf or the kerchief. Vatiskas, and she covered. What did she cover?
Face.
Well, she was dressed, and her face. Okay. She covered her face. Okay, good. Who else covered their face? Okay. Leah and Rachel were covered. It's true that their face was covered. It doesn't say it in the pasuk.
He had never seen her, and then at some point he saw her and realized how beautiful she was.
Okay. What I meant to say is, who else in the Torah it says explicitly another woman covers her face? So Josh got it. Go ahead.
Tamar.
It says the same thing. It uses the same verb.
Mm-hmm.
It says that, how does it say it? What does it say?
Oh, yeah, in the crossroads.
Yep. When she went to the crossroads so that Yehuda would see her. The Parashas by Yeshev. What page are you on?
210.
Yedalad, 14. Vatechas bat sa'if. Vatechas bat sa'if. She covered with the sa'if, with the kerchief. Here it also says, Vatikach hat sa'if vatiskas. I saw a medrash that in two places, it says in the Torah that a woman covered herself with the tzaif, with the kerchief. And in both cases, the woman had twins. Here, Rivka is going to have twins,
Yaakov and Esav, and there Tamar has Peretz and Zerach. We're going to see many many similarities drawn between Rivka and Tamar. So hold that thought. It's not for now. It's when we get to Parshas Vayeshev, which will be in a little while. But when we get there, this is a very important similarity to understand. What is the Torah doing, drawing our attention to these two women, Rivka and Tamar? And just to pique your interest, so you'll remember this in a few months when we get to it, the what do they cover themselves with?
Scarf.
Right? How would you say it? And she took a scarf and covered herself? Or she took the scarf and covered herself? How would you say it?
Yeah.
A scarf. In both places it says, and she took the scarf. In our pasuk it says, Batikach hatsa'if batiskas. She took the scarf and covered herself. And later on page 210 it says, Batachasa batsa'if, which also means in the. Instead of bit saif, it says bat saif in the scarf and was hidden.
They're not dark with the same scarf, are they?
I suspect that it is.
Really?
I suspect. But we will have this. All have to wait. This is jumping the gun. We have to learn about Tamar. We can't really do this without understanding.
I would have expected to say haba saif instead of the bays.
No, bays is ha. It's beha. That's what you say. Okay, maybe I had something just to make sure you keep coming back.
If that were true, wouldn't uncles use the same word?
Does he use a different word?
I can't find the word that he uses over in Vayeshev. In Vayeshev, he uses the word megaze or something. Megaze? I just don't find it right now.
Here it says Eifa. That's what it says in our pasuk over here.
Yeah.
And over there, what does it say?
Eifa.
Yeah, it's the same word, Eifa. Same word.
Oh.
Okay. So she covers herself with this kerchief. Again, why would she cover herself? Okay, for tznius, but she's meaning her husband. What's that?
Okay.
So she feels this is the way that she should meet him. Then they actually meet each other. Vayesapera Eved LiYitzchak, the slave explains to Yitzchak, tells over to Yitzchak from the word Sipur to tell a story. Eitz Kolad Dvarim Asher saw all the things that he did. Vayevieha Yitzchak Haohela Sara Imo, and Yitzchak brought her to the tent of Sarah his mother. Vayikach es Rivka, and he took Rivka, Vatihiloli Isha, and she was to him as a wife, Vayeha Veha, and he loved her. Vayinachem Yitzchak Achari Imo, and Yitzchak was comforted after his mother, which Rashi explains that ever since his mother had died, he had not been comforted from the loss of his mother, and now with Rivka he is comforted at the loss of his mother. The most common preschool and kindergarten project to bring home in Parshas Chaye Sarah is this pasuk, is that when Rivka came to the tent of Sarah. Okay. So, good. What? Yeah, everybody does it. Okay. So it's a beautiful, it's because it's true. And it's a beautiful project to do with the kids. That the Rashi tells us, Chazal tell us, but I'm going to give you some depth into this, so just hold on a minute. So, Sarah, we know that as long as she was there in the tent with Abraham, there were three miracles that went on weekly for Sarah. One, that there was a cloud always over the tent, representing the Shekhinah, representing Hashem's divine presence. The candles stayed lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, from Friday to Friday. She lit them on Friday. They stayed lit all through the week. And the challah always tasted extra special. There was a bracha in the challah that it was always a special thing. Why those three miracles? What do they represent? Okay, we're going to get to what they represent. When Sarah died, these three things stopped. The cloud dispersed, the candles did not stay lit, and the bread never tasted as good. When Rivka came to the tent, Now, everything came back. Okay. What do these three things represent? So we know that the Mishnah tells us, and we say it on Friday night, that there are three mitzvos that are specific to women, even though this, all three mitzvos are also mitzvos for a man. However, they are mitzvos that are special for a woman. And they are? Okay, nida, chala, and hadlakas haner. Those are the three. So hadlakas haner is lighting the candles. We'll do it backwards. Hadlakas haner is lighting the candles on Friday night. Even though, if there is no woman in the house, a man must light. So if the mitzvah is on a man as well. But if there's a man and a woman in the house, the woman does it. It's a special mitzvah for women. Although it is brought down, by the way, just so you know, that it is appropriate for the husband to arrange the candles so that he can also participate. It is appropriate that he arrange the candles for his wife to light. That is the proper thing to do so that he is involved in some way. But it is particularly a woman's mitzvah. Challah is that if you bake enough, not only bread, but anything that's baked, cookies, cakes, pizza, whatever it is you're baking, but if you bake enough of it, then you would have to separate a certain amount, and that is challah, which is something which is given to the Kohen. Today, since the Kohanim are not pure, we don't give it to the Kohen, instead we burn it. But that is the mitzvah of challah, which again, if a man would bake, he would also have to separate challah, but it is a specific mitzvah for women. And of course, nida, which is family purity, that is specific to women, although again, the rules that are created through the mitzvah, family purity, apply to men as well as women. But it is a specific mitzvah to women. All three of those mitzvahs are specific to women. So these three miracles represent those three mitzvahs. The candles obviously represent the candles. The challah being extra special represents the mitzvah of challah. And this is the one I want to focus on. The cloud over the tent represents the mitzvah of nida, of family purity. Now, how does that cloud represent family purity?
Because it takes three to make a child, Hashem, the mother, and the father.
Okay. So you're saying it has to do with childbearing. Okay. So the cloud...
And also because when a husband and wife get married, you make a mikdash. You bring a shechina into the home.
Okay. So the cloud represents a purity in the home. A purity in scrupulousness in the mitzvos. But it also represents something else.
Separation. The cloud is separating.
Oh, that's interesting. If it would come between them.
Right.
Okay. It doesn't seem like the cloud seems to have hovered over the tent.
Is it protection?
It is a protection. Correct. It is a protection. The cloud represents, as we know in the Midbar, the cloud represented protection. Right. That is true. It is Hashem's representation. It is a protection. It is showing that He is there. Now we know, Chazal tell us, and you've heard this from me before, Ish v'Isha, husband and wife, Shalom b'Neihem, if there's peace between them, Shechina b'Neihem, then the Shechina is with them. If there is peace in the home, then the Shechina, Hashem's divine presence, resides in the home with the husband and the wife. Famous story, again, most of you have heard this from me before, but it is worth repeating. Famous story that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zichrono Livracha, blessed memory, who was well known that he and his wife had incredible shalom bayis, the harmony, the peace in the home was legendary. There is a story about him that when he would approach his home, before he entered the house, he would straighten his jacket or his tie, whatever he was wearing, he would straighten himself out before he'd walk in the door. And when one of his students asked him why, he said, because if there's shalom in the home, then the Shechina, then Hashem's divine presence is in the home. And I need to make sure that I am dressed up properly to greet Hashem's divine presence. That's the story they say. I suspect that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zechar Racha, did that also for himself to make sure that he was extra careful with the shalom in his house. Because when he was about to walk into his house and meet his wife,
And before he walked in the door, he made sure that he looked proper, presentable, and in his own mind, he was getting himself ready. This is a place where there is not going to be any strife. This is a place where there's not going to be any friction. This is a place where there's only going to be peace and harmony. That's my suspicion. The Shekhinah is found in a home where there is peace and harmony. When Sarah was alive, Abraham and Sarah's relationship was so close, was so beautiful, was so harmonious, that there was the Shekhinah resided constantly, consistently in the home. You didn't have to guess. You saw the cloud overhead. When Sarah died, there was no husband and wife anymore. So there was no Shekhinah residing in the home. Now Yitzchak brings Rivka into the home. And what returns?
A cloud.
All three of these things return. The cloud, which represents the peace and the harmony and the beautiful relationship that they had. Again, don't believe those who, through ignorance, would like to suggest that Yitzchak and Rivka didn't have a beautiful relationship. They clearly had a beautiful relationship, because if they didn't, there would not be a cloud hovering over the tent, which is the Shekhinah. That remained over their tent the entire time they were married, and never left. Which means there was never any friction between them that would jeopardize or compromise the Shekhinah residing in their tent. With Yitzchak and Rivka in particular, it's easy to believe that, because you never find any strife between them in the entire Torah. At least with Sarah and Abraham, we do find at one point that there is some argument, whatever that means, on their level. And with Yaakov and Rachel, you do find some argument, whatever that means, on their level. But you never find anything between Yitzchak and Rivka. They clearly had a beautiful relationship the entire time they were married. That's obvious. Never does the Torah give us any inkling of anything but a beautiful relationship between the two. And that is represented by the cloud. But as I said, Abraham and Sarah had it too. So they also had a beautiful relationship.
So it could be that the shalom bias of Abraham and Sarah's household was shaken by Hagar or Ishmael's behavior. And that was one of the ways she could see that this is not working, something's going with the cloud?
We're not told that it ever departed. Perhaps it did, we don't know anything about that. Yeah, that we don't know of anything. We do know one place, because of the way Hagar was acting, Sarah goes to Abram and says, Kamasi alacha, my theft is really because of you. What I'm experiencing is because of you. And Abraham responds, you're right. Do as you see fit. It doesn't develop into any problem, because Sarah comes with the complaint and Abraham says, okay, you're right.
Did they have two separate tents? Because it said that Yitzchak brought Rivka to Sarah's tent.
Yeah.
So it means that Abraham had separate tent. So they have two separate tents for men.
The Rashi tells us that it was the way of the women to have a tent during the day where they would do their work. But this probably does not mean the daytime tent. This probably means the nighttime tent. It only says Sarah's tent because Rivka is the one replacing Sarah. We do find, for example, that although Yaakov had four wives, there were not five nighttime tents. There were four tents. His tent was Rachel's tent, the main wife. We'll see that later when we get to the end of Parshas Vayetze. So here I imagine that this is both of their tent. So this is the relationship that we are introduced to between Yitzchak and Rivka. This is the way they meet, and this is the way they're going to live their lives. This is extremely important to be aware of, because anything we read about in Parashas Toldos, which is where we want to know about the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, vis-a-vis Yaakov and Esav, and when we get there, it will be duly explained how they related to their children and how they related to each other concerning their children. But it is important to talk about that against the backdrop of knowing that they had a beautiful relationship. And that is clearly indicated here with the knowledge that they had this cloud. And that is why I think it is appropriate and correct that the children bring home that project every Parshas Chayei Sarah, to reinforce the message of the relationship that our Avos and Imos had with each other. Now,
Let's just read the next pasuk because this really ties in with what we just said. Vayosef Avraham continued, Vayikach Isha, and he took a wife, Ushma Keturah, and her name was Keturah. And who is Keturah? Hagar. Why is she called Keturah?
Does that indicate that she was a different
person,
perhaps?
What's the shortage of the word?
Is that like a name pen?
There you go. Ketores. Keturah is from the root Ketores, incense. And to tell us that she was beautiful, just as infant smells beautiful, she acted beautifully. Her maisim, her actions were beautiful in that she, it doesn't, the way Rashi tells it to us, I'll just redo the Rashi here. Rashi says, Zo Hagar, this is Hagar, Venikres Keturah, she is called Keturah, Al Shem Shenoyim Ma'asel Ketores, that her actions are pleasant, like Ketores, like incense. And also, because she did not remarry after leaving Avraham. You see, Hagar, although she was thrown out of the house, by who? Who threw her out of the house?
Avraham
threw her out of the house. It's true, Sarah is the one who told Avraham to do it, but Avraham threw her out of the house. Although Avraham threw her out of the house, Hagar never lost sight of the fact that Avraham was a guf kadosh, a guf tahar, and a person of incredible stature. And she could not see herself remarrying because nobody else could live up to Avraham. And therefore she remained, although she could have remarried. How do we know she could have remarried? What were her credentials?
She was a princess.
She was the princess. She was the daughter of Paro. She could have remarried had she chosen to, but she would not because she had been married to Avraham and she could not marry anybody else after having been married to Avraham. Had she rejected Avraham, of course she would have remarried. We find later that when Naomi is returning to Eretz Yisrael in Megillas Rus with Rus and Arpah, and we know that Rus and Arpah attempted to accompany her back to Eretz Yisrael, and Naomi says to them, don't come back with me, I can't do anything for you. They had been married to her sons, and she says, I can't, there's nothing I can do for you now, don't come back with me. And they persist, and then she says again, no, don't. Rus persists, but Arpah turns back. We know that when she turned back, she fell, a precipitous fall. And the Gemara says an unbelievable thing. The Gemara says, this is likely an exaggeration, but it's still important to hear how the Gemara says it. The Gemara says that when she turned around and left Naomi, the fall was so precipitous, that night she lived with 100 men and a dog. That's what the Gemara says about Arpah, when she left Naomi. What the Gemara is bringing out is that she had been so close to greatness, and that when she turned her back on it, she simply fell like a ton of bricks.
Was Goliath conceived that day?
Likely. I mean, I don't know. The Gemara says that he comes from her. Over here, when Hagar was thrown out of Avraham's house, she did not fall. She got hold of herself, did not let herself drop. Not only did she not remarry, she didn't live with anybody. Because after Avraham, there could be nobody else. And so she just waited. And later, after Sarah's death, Yitzchak goes and returns her, Hagar, who is now called Keturah, to Avraham. And they remarry. Yes.
Is it over the halacha? In Yiddish fact that a man can marry his wife if she didn't marry someone in between?
It's a halach. It's explicit later on in the Torah.
But is it from here?
It doesn't have to be from here, meaning that machzir grushaso, to take back a wife, what Mr. Starkman is bringing up is that the law is, that if a man divorces his wife, he may remarry her, as long as she's never married anybody else. If she marries anybody else in between, even if she becomes widowed or divorced from the second husband, she can never go back to the first husband. Mm-hmm. That is the halacha, which will, it's later on in the Torah, it's explicit.
Didn't Miriam do that?
Excuse me?
Didn't Miriam remarry her first husband?
Miriam?
Yochevet?
May, it depends. Some say yes. Depends on the, right. There are different opinions over there, but Yochevet.
Where she was living, so it was known where Hagar stayed?
What do you mean?
Well, Yitzhak knew where to go to find her.
Yeah, apparently he knew she was there. Apparently she knew. But Ishmael just came. What's that?
Ishmael had just come back, and he's gone with him to the Keda. How's your mom? Where's she living?
Yeah, okay. It could be that that's how news got around. It could be. But just to bring up, so this was before the Torah was given, and a non-Jew can take back their wife after she marries someone else and then is widowed or divorced from the second one. Mm-hmm. So Avraham, there's a difference of opinion exactly how they, whether they, we know they kept the Torah, but did they keep the Torah as Jews or as non-Jews? And so this was not necessarily a problem had she remarried.
But that same apply to polygamy.
She wasn't a Pelegesh. Yeah, she was a wife.
It's not like Bilhan Zilpah, they were Pelegesh.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Who remarried? Who renamed her?
The Torah renames her. That's a good question. See what's being said. Who renamed her? Who named her? The Torah renames her. And we find this in the Torah several places where the Torah gives several names to the same person. It doesn't always mean that they were known by all those names. Moshe, for example, had how many names?
Ten.
Moshe had ten names. Yisro had
seven
names. Now that doesn't mean that their parents gave them it was a very long bris, with all those names. Right? But it means that the Torah is telling us that they embodied all of these different character traits with all those different names. And so here, by renaming her, the Torah is telling us about her. The name speaks of the essence of the person, and now the Torah is telling us that she has changed. She went from Hagar to Keturah.
That is true for men also. If man divorced his wife, he can remarry her only if he was not married to someone else.
No.
Woman who can marry anyone and then return to his wife.
No, it can't be the same the other way around, because a man can have two wives, according to the Torah. So marrying somebody else isn't going to preclude him from remarrying the first wife. Uh-huh. Now, the...
But I'm reading here that some say that's machloka stuff.
Whether what?
Whether Keturah was Hagar
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, there's
some say she,
yeah.
She was the daughter of Yafis.
Mm-hmm.
Or from the family of Yafis.
Yeah, some say that. There is a different...
I never heard that either.
Yeah, there are a couple of opinions. It's true. What does the name Hagar mean?
Stranger.
The stranger. Right? The stranger. And now she goes from being the stranger to being Keturah, to being incense.
Well, Gar is masculine.
Yeah, that's true. If you were to use this, I just mean, what is the root of the name? Right? So she goes from being a stranger, an outsider, to being Keturah. Yes.
I'm just a little confused. So the Torah names her...
either her father named her Hagar. Somebody.
No. But after that, she gets named. So how does that happen? When she returns, Abraham knows that she's Keturah, or does someone say, "Here comes Keturah"?
It could be nobody called her that. Uh-huh. It could be it's only here the Torah.
The Torah
says this: Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Meaning, I want to tell you something about her. She's no longer who she was before. Now she's Keturah. Right. Now with this. She has many children for Avraham. Vatevet lo, she gives birth for him. Es Zimron, ves Yachshan, ves Medan, ves Midyan, ves Yishvak, ves Shuach. Six sons. And then, V'yakshan Yolad, es Yachshan, one of the sons, has grandchildren. Es Sheva, ves Dedan, it's two other children. Uvnei Dedan, hayu Ashurim, ulutushim, uluumim. And the Gemara goes, the Torah goes on. Other grandchildren, Uvne Midyan, Efa, Efer, Vachanoch, Vavida, Elda'a. So it's telling you all kinds of offspring. Kol Eile, B'nei, Keturah, all of these were the children of Keturah. Now this is a necessary thing because Avraham, when his name was changed from Avram to Avraham, he went from Av La'aram, the father of Aram, which is where he came from, to Avraham, the Torah says before, Av Hamon Goyim, the father of a multitude of nations. Abraham is not only the forefather of the Jewish people, he is also the father of a multitude of nations. Where are those multitude of nations going to come from? They came from Keturah. Keturah provides the rest of the offspring of Avraham. and they are all these people over here. Now.
So, well, there are 12 total?
There's more than, I mean, if you count the grandchildren, there's more than 12. There's a whole bunch over here.
She had 6, and plus Ishmael, that's 7.
Well, yeah, well, Ishmael's a separate, a whole separate thing. But you're right, there's Ishmael.
There's only 7. He has 7 children with Keturah.
Well, that are listed, but once the grandchildren are mentioned, this is also called the children of Keturah, the grandchildren as well. The Torah lists these names. It means they were prominent. If the Torah lists the names, it means they were prominent people.
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, plus 13. Sounds like there were 16 names here. They're all the children of Keturah. So what is going to be the function of these people? We're going to wrap it up with this for tonight. And we're going to read on a little bit more. Vayitain Avraham eskol asher lo liYitzchak. Avraham gave all that he had to Yitzchak. For livnei ha'pilag shim asher le'Avraham, and to the children of the concubines that Avraham had. Nasan Avraham matanos. Avraham gave gifts. Vayeshalachem me'al Yitzchak beno be'odenu chai. And he sent them from upon Yitzchak his son while he, Avraham, was still alive. Kedma to the east. El Eretz Kedem. To the land of the east. That's where he sent them. This is very mysterious. All these people, that when it says the children of the concubines, Chazal tells us there was only one concubine, and that is Keturah. And
so she's a wife, not a concubine.
Yeah, well, there she had been a wife before. You were asking about Machzeh Grushasa.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, here he sends them off to the land of the east, and he gives them matanos, he gives them gifts. The question is, and I don't have a full answer for you, what role do they play? It seems that it is important that Avraham be known as Av Hamon Goyim, the father of a multitude of nations, not simply the forefather of the Jewish people, but a father of multitude of nations. And here, Keturah serves the role of providing that multitude. And Avraham, though, making it clear who the true heir is, and who his legacy is through, he gives everything he has to Yitzchak, gives some gifts to the other ones, and sends them off while he, Avraham, is still alive. It's hard to know what is the role of these people. East to the land of the east. Where's that?
Hold it.
India.
Iraq.
Anywhere where they offer hospitality to guests, that's them.
Okay.
Stands.
Is
out
it
out of Eretz Yisrael?
Okay.
Other nations,
but it went to the east. It says it went. They went to the east. So is it India? Is it China? Is it Japan?
Is it really?
We don't know. Just as
it doesn't make a difference as long as it's outside of Eretz Yisrael.
But to the east. I think we know that the indigenous people that are to the east of Eretz Yisrael, at least some of those people, are going to be these people. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's a multitude of people. Av Hamon Goyim. A multitude of nations. Maybe, we don't, I mean, it's all conjecture. And I'm not going to pretend to know. I'm not going to make guesses. I'm just pointing out to you that there is a role for these people to play. And they are to the east. Now, we don't know that they are currently to the east, because people got all mixed up. But they were at least, at one point, to the east of Eretz Israel. And what is their role? I don't know. But it seems important that their mother is Keturah. It seems important that it is Keturah who has become a righteous woman who has brought them into the world. So for whatever faults they have, and they're not the heir of Abraham, they're not like Yitzchak, but there seems to be some importance given to them, and they are sent off to the east. What is the role of those people in the east? I don't know. It's to me something which is an interesting thing to speculate about, but not something that I have any real knowledge about. Yes?
I remember I was at Rabbi Parnas's class, and what he said was that Abraham gave these particular people mystical gifts. You know, so that all the other religions, perhaps, sprout out from.
He definitely gave them mystical gifts. The problem is that Abraham would never support paganism or multiple gods. Avram was the one who carried him the message of monotheism.
Yeah, but if you're not within the source, you know, you can...
If you're not anchored.
If you're not anchored,
yeah,
and you have these mystical gifts, you know, when you're away from...
It says, Elam asar lehem shem lashbia hashadim adonehem. So that he...
Power over the demons.
The demons that he got from Avimelech or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are the things.
Yeah.
How do you acquire demons?
I'll teach you how to see them.
I read that. You won't rub them.
Well, it's a question anyway. It's really what Josh was asking. That first it calls her a wife, and then later calls her a pilagish.
Right.
That's difficult to understand. I understand it to mean that relative to Sarah,
right,
she was a secondary wife. Okay. That's the way I understand it.
So what's it like, Isha Shani instead of pilagish?
Yeah, I don't know.
That scarf. Why is it the scarf?
Yeah, yeah, you gotta wait till Vayesha.
I understand why it's the scarf there, because it must be this one. But why is this one already these scarves?
Good, good. Very good point. Excellent. Okay.
Let's come from Ottoman.
You gotta wait till Vayesha.
We're gonna come from Ottoman.
We're gonna come.
Yeah. No. A good guess.
Next week we're going to, next week we'll finish Parashas Chayei Sarah, and then we'll be able to move on to Tolos.